You're listening to
The Classroom Collaborative
podcast with your hosts, Dee Dee Wills,
Ed Rock,
and Adam Peterson.
Here we go.
We're so glad you're here.
Let's get started.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to The Classroom Collaborative podcast. I'm your host. I don't have Adam today, so it makes it a little bit hard for me, but I am Dee Dee Wills. Adam is off with the sick dog today. So, but I am super excited to have my very good friend, Marcia McGuire with
Hello.
Me. Hello, Marcia. How are you?
I'm great. It's summer. We're off.
Summer. So Marcia, tell everybody a little bit. I know most people know you from the differentiated kindergarten, but maybe share in with the things that happen in the McGuire life. What's going on with you this summer?
Well, for those of you that don't know me, I have three very active boys, and so they keep me super busy. We are golfing and soccer and camp, and Mikhail is working now, so my oldest is 17, my middle one is 15, and my youngest, Miguel, is 13. They're busy, busy. And then not adopted, but we are raising another leader dog for the blind, so we just got a new puppy, 3 weeks old, so he's in the Tasmanian devil stage, you know, where he's wants to bite everything. So but yeah. His name is Potter.
He's crazy, crazy, but sweet.
Oh yeah. So sweet.
I am always in awe of you. For those of you who don't know, she is a full-time classroom teacher. She is like a super mom. And oh, by the way, I'm raising a puppy, second puppy, which having one is a lot, but having two that you knowingly give up is heartbreaking, but also time consuming.
I certainly ugly cried when I had to take the first one back, but I think it's the thing that, you know, so many people were so good to us when Mikhail went through cancer. My oldest son had cancer. And if you follow that journey, you know, teachers were so giving to me. So we're always looking for ways that as a family, we can give back. And this was just really a natural thing, you know, because I know that if the dog passes everything and the training and all that, then they're going to go to someone who really is going to be their set of eyes. So,
it's an amazing program. And I, you know, it's not easy raising a puppy, let alone, you know, one that you're thinking, you know, that you're not going to have for life. So your heart is so big, and probably one of the 15 things that I love about you is how big your heart is.
Well, thank you.
And you also, besides doing all of that, you blog over on your blog, you create products for teachers, you do it all.
Yeah, I think you get that teacher blood in you, and you just naturally, the things that you love to do, you spend more time doing. So presenting and the things that are important to me, I talk about and I present about. So, you know, when I started blogging 12 years ago, or no, 10 years ago, it was 10 years ago in 2012, I started, I think.
Yeah.
So yeah, just about 10 years ago. It was because, you know, teaching is such a small, I mean, it is a big community, but back then you were limited to the people on your team. And I was in a school where we only had two or three kindergarten teachers. So I wanted to make my world bigger. And so blogging, you know, you connect with other teachers, and then the internet really boomed, and Facebook, you know, Instagram, and you get to meet all these great teachers, and then you start presenting, and that's really when your community becomes big, you know,
it's really big. Yeah.
World for me instead of this small world, and where you can learn from each other. And so I love what I do.
When we both started, Facebook wasn't even, I mean, it was around, right? It was around, but it wasn't something that people used to communicate as far as there weren't groups. Their pages were something a lot of people didn't know about. And then for Instagram, forget about it, right? That wasn't even a thing. So Pinterest wasn't a thing. So how teachers were able to make their world bigger was through blogging, and how we were able to, you know, get outside of our classroom. So blogging was a great opportunity. Now there's lots of different ways that we can reach people, but I still feel like blogging is where you can tell that longer story, give more than just a snippet, and really help teachers see things that
definitely where my heart is, because that's where I started. I'm very uncomfortable in video. This is very uncomfortable for me because I'm self-conscious, but I mean, I like blogging. I like presenting in person, face to face, but you know, I've had to learn how to now do presenting virtually. Yeah. you know, especially like through the Educator Summit. That was great experience. And I've done a couple of other ones. So, you know, you just kind of have to roll with the punches.
Well, I mean, I think that's kind of the theme for 2020, 2021, hopefully 2022 will feel a little bit more normal. But the theme is that we have to step outside of our comfort zone and being asked to do things, teachers for sure, that we've never thought we would have to do, never imagined that we would be asked to do, let alone being able to master it like you have. I mean, you've done a great job of figuring out how to do this distance learning. As far as teaching other teachers, did you have to do any distance learning in your school, or were you all pretty much face to face?
You know, I think I'm probably not like most folks, but we had to be prepared to do distance learning. I mean, we had to be ready to go at any second, so that if we did go hybrid or distance, we were ready to get there. But as of the end of August last year, all the way through June, we were face-to-face every day. I had one day of virtual learning. One day is it.
And so this is awful.
Oh, you know what? I think that being a distance learning teacher has its, you know, oh my God, struggles. Those teachers, amazing. And hybrid, amazing. And face-to-face, amazing. I don't care what you were teaching last year or how you were teaching. If you made it through last year, God bless you. Give yourself grace and a long summer of vacation, because you deserve it. It was crazy having 5-year-olds in masks every day. No, it was not. And social distancing. Yeah, right.
Didn't happen. Yeah, they're five. They're five. We don't do social distancing. We do hugs and touching and all of that stuff in my bubble. No personal space. You know, you mentioned the Educator Summit, which was the big summit we did over the summer. But oftentimes, the subject that you did for the Educator Summit is something that you are really passionate about, which is the fine motor education, ways in which you can strengthen fine motor. So I know that you and I talked about this before, but for those people who haven't heard that Facebook Live or whatever, I would love for you to talk about how did that begin for you? Like, what was it about fine motor? Like, what brought that passion on for you?
Well, I think, you know, when I started blogging a long time ago, and, you know, progressively as the years have gone by teaching kindergarten, I've just seen kids coming to me, even if they're really bright and capable children, they didn't have any strength in their hand to do the work that we needed them to do in kindergarten. Okay, so you put a pencil in their hand, they're really not prepared to use that pencil. And so I think there was a disconnect. There was a disconnect. You know, we were sending really bright kids to school and kindergarten. Oh, my kid, he knows how to read. He can do this. But they couldn't write. They couldn't hold a pencil. And they wanted to do well.
Right.
It was frustrating for them. So they didn't feel successful. Writing was hard. I don't want to write. It's too hard. It hurts.
My hand hurts, right? All that.
So I knew, like, you know, time out. Something's got to happen. They're never going to be successful writers. And they're always going to be frustrated and avoiding writing if they don't have the strength to do it. You know, we can't put the cart before the horse.
Right.
I intentionally made an effort because, you know, in kindergarten, it's like more. We're going to stick your day with more things that you have to do. There's no time for fine motor. You have to integrate it into everything and all your practice and all your skills. So one of the things in Michigan at that time, you know, kids would come in the morning and they wander in at all different times of the day. If your class is 8:30, you had kids coming at 9. And I'm like, it drove me crazy. And some of it was, you know, parents couldn't get them to school. Some of them was, you know, bad weather or the bus. And that half an hour of time seemed to be like dead time. It was wasteful. Right. And so I decided that instead of giving them a worksheet, which was not engaging and didn't keep them occupied, I started with fine motor bins in the morning. So fine motor workstations, I call them. And what I found is that it gave them that time, a specific and dedicated time for fine motor that was integrated into other like math and ELA skills.
Right.
But it also gave them time to look forward to coming in the morning.
Yes.
Social. They got to be social with their friends. They were independent. So they were practicing essential skills, but they also were getting fine motor work as well, which helped them be successful when it came to writing. And that just kind of, I started that a long time ago, And it just evolved and evolved into, you know, I would find things, you know, locally or in my closet or at garage sales or Goodwill, things that I thought, hey, you know what, this would be really great for fine motor. So that's kind of how it started. And I just, well, if I have math stations, there's fine motor. If I have ELA literacy stations, there's fine motor in there integrated into the skills.
Right, right. I love that. And we all know that that transition period is always really tough for classroom management. And when you have your first 30 minutes of the day in a transition type mode, it can make students who are prone to having some off times, having a tough time self-monitoring their behavior. And then some students who need to start off the day a little bit more quiet, you know, it allows them to kind of gear up for the day. So it is a great way to start your day, is to have something that they work on something, but it feels very game-like, right?
It does. And it's independent. So, you know, there's not worksheets and things like that. You know, once you teach them what the games are or what the activities are, they're very capable of going and getting the things themselves. And also, so after I started these stations, they decided to throw breakfast into the mix. So now we serve breakfast in our classrooms. And I thought, oh my gosh, there goes my morning workstations. But it's actually been no problem at all. What I found is that kids who really want to eat breakfast are going to eat breakfast.
Right.
And then they're done and they go right to those stations so they have time to do them. And so it's worked out. It's been really great. And the kids that used to lag, you know, those kids that just kind of wandering down the hall.
Right.
Quick to get to school. They want to know what they're doing next. Oh, you know what? I figured out in 3 days I'm going to be doing this activity and I really want to do that one. Or tomorrow I have this, so I'm going to be here on time. And they're getting their clothes off faster because, you know, in Michigan we have winters that are like,
you have layers.
Nothing's worse than, you know, snow pants and boots and stuff.
Yes.
But they really learn how to get out of those quickly because they want to get in there
and want to get started
with their friends and do their morning work. Yeah.
So one of the things that I noticed about your morning tabs is there are activities in there, and this is my favorite way to have activities. There are activities in there that are like a diverse amount of activities, right? You have how many, I mean, I'm going to say at least 8 or 9 different types of activities, but there's probably more than that.
Well, it depends on, so for me, I do morning workstations 4 days a week. On the 5th day, we have another activity that we do, so we don't do them on that morning. I think it's computers. You know, we never used to have computers in our classroom. Now, after COVID, we got a computer for each kid. So I only do it 4 days a week. So I kind of figure out how many days do I need, and that's how many tubs I have. So, and there are that many different activities, but they're this activities kind of, you know, they change each month, but they are the same. So if I have sticker activity, it's going to be a sticker activity the next month, so it will just be a different theme.
Right.
They become very familiar, and because it's familiar, it's independent, and then they can be really successful with it.
Right.
But yeah, so I kind of look at multiple intelligences. So I want to be able to kind of hit all of those, especially at this age, because kids really don't know how they learn or how they demonstrate what they learn the best way. So I like to go into a lot of those different things. So we have a lot of movement, sensory, sometimes I have them doing something with nature. So it just depends. But there's a large, large variety. So there's, you know, I'll use Legos. I try to use things that we already have in our classrooms.
Right.
So Legos and stickers and Q-tips and
little pattern blocks that you have. I've seen those and then the cubes and maybe a lot of math manipulatives that are used in a different way.
Yes. So erasers, you know, if you have erasers. And I always tell people, even if you don't have the same thing I have, you have buttons and you have pom-poms. And if you say, oh, you know, you can use colors the same way you can use erasers or whatever the manipulative is that you're using.
Right.
I try to use thematic ones, but you know, if you don't have them, just use what you have. Kids love keys. Locks and keys is another really great one I use a ton.
And I noticed that some of them are using, you know, just like pinching things, and other ones are grabbing things. And so you're trying to get kind of like the whole hand under control.
So you need to, you know, I'm not an occupational therapist. I'd like to be one in my next life because I think they're amazing.
Just do that in your spare time? Can you go through you have like lots of spare time.
Right. So, I mean, I want them to be able, everyone's deficiency is not the same. So I want to be able to give them a variety of materials. So one of the things is like therapy putty. We do use Play-Doh. Don't get me wrong. Play-Doh's the best, right?
Right.
Hate it. They hate it because it's messy.
Yeah.
But I use Therapy Putty, which is an occupational therapy tool. Right. And it comes with different strengths. And that's a really great tool because it uses pinchers, but they're also pulling it apart and pinching it. And then they have to put the pieces back in. So that uses a lot of different muscles. We also use a lot of different kinds of tongs. Sometimes it's Q-tips, or I'm sorry, clothespins. Sometimes clip bags for potato chips. Sometimes they're big tongs. Sometimes they use cheater chopsticks, if you know what those are.
Yes.
The chopsticks with the little ends on them that hold them together. So they're all going to use things just a little bit differently. And people always say, well, aren't you worried that they're holding them incorrectly? But at the beginning of the year, I'm not so worried about it because even if they're holding them, like not as they're holding a pencil, you know, they're using a different grip,
right.
They're still working some muscle. And I want them to enjoy the activity first.
Right, right.
Before they become frustrated with it. And then as they become comfortable, then I can move and say, hey, why can't you hold it like this? Yeah.
Right, so, right. Well, isn't that kind of the way of kindergarten, right? We take them right where they are, and then we, through our instruction and kind of fine tuning, we're able to get them to the place that we want them to go. And if we expect it to happen from day one, we'll be disappointed and they'll be frustrated. So that gradual process of bringing them to that skill is where it's at, right?
Yeah, they think they're having fun. I mean, they just think it's a game and playing and whatever. And, you know, eventually they'll talk about it. We'll talk about it and we'll say, you know, we do those activities because we want to be strong writers and we want it to be easy for us and we want to be successful. And then they're like, oh, you know, this is important work. It's not just play.
It's just
think
play.
It's play.
Right, right. And then by having those activities swapped out, it's that novelty that makes the brain come alive and say, hey, this is really cool. Let's pay attention to this. But then it's just engaging.
Well, and I think, you know, even as a new teacher, I remember thinking when I would set up stations, I'm like, okay, I have 5 stations. I have to have 5 new activities every day. So that's 25 stations for what was I thinking?
Right.
Kindergartners, they'll listen to the same song, Let It Go. They watch the same movie, Frozen, 150 times. They don't care. They love things that are familiar to them, and they love things that they feel successful about. So if you have a game, or if you have a fine motor activity and you're using tongs and you're picking up pom-poms one time, change out the manipulative, and it's a brand new game. So
a brand new game.
They don't care. And it's a brand new game. They think, oh, wow, this is amazing. But you know what? Their little brain tells them, I know how to play this game. I'm successful at this game and it's fun. I love this. So I always tell, you know, teachers, don't make the same mistake I did as a new teacher and think you needed to have 100 station activities. Oh my gosh. What was I doing? It was crazy.
Yeah. Right. Keep that familiar thing. Just swap out the materials and you have students being successful and you're not losing your mind. Yeah.
Right. And they're independent at that point because they know how to play that game. So that allows you to do, especially if it's morning work, then it allows you to take attendance and talk to parents or answer emails or whatever it is that you need to do at the very beginning of the day. For me, it's like managing that breakfast mess or you know, doing those things. But if it's during different station activities or math or whatever, that's when you can pull your groups. So definitely make those activities something that's familiar to them that you are not having to manage.
You know, that beginning of the day is sort of, it's like sometimes like a crapshoot. Like you can have a beginning of the day as a teacher. It could be like, you know, easy breezy. You're greeting everybody. It could also be the student who comes in and hands you a note, says, I'm going home with so-and-so, but you don't have their address. And it's really not clear how they're getting there. Are you going on, you know, so all of that is stuff that you try to, you know, you can't wait to the end of the day. You got to get that ball rolling right when the day starts, or, you know, somebody comes in and they've been sick or all those different things that happen. It's always sort of like what's in store for me today. But to have that respite by having students engaged in something that's meaningful allows you to do that. Probably also a great time for you to do. I always did my assessments first thing in the morning. Yeah. I would pull students over. And I mean, I know you're a huge ESGI fan. I am too. But that's when I would pull students over or walk up to them with an iPad and just do a quick, you know, touch base. So that's a great time to do it also.
Exactly. So it might not take me that long to do my attendance or whatever. And so right. that's when I would grab my iPad. And because the activities that my students are doing aren't just fine motor, they're combined with a skill, then like right. if they're doing a counting game, I can go over there and quickly do an assessment.
You right, know? Just look over their shoulder. Yeah.
Yeah. So ESGI has changed everything for me. So I find that even if you have 5 minutes of free time, if you're walking your kids down the hall or walking them back, that's when I grab students. Oh, you want to test on your sight words or your ball. We call them ball words in my classroom.
Yeah.
We can do that as we walk down the hall. So it made it. Just
it's really, really, it's that essential tool. I always say it's bake sale worthy. Like if my school hadn't picked up the cost of it, I would be doing a bake sale to earn it because it is really, and then I would eat all the brownies.
Well, it's really funny because I used ESGI before the rest of my team. So I'm in a little town, but at that time we had 4 elementary schools. So I was at 1 elementary school and I was using it. And so when my administrator would come to me and say, can you give me this data? And I'm like, yeah, I got it right here. And she's like, you don't have to pull it up on your computer, or you don't have to
dig through your file drawer,
take your notes, you know, those little clipboards. Yeah. And I'm like, no, I got it right here. And she's like, what is this? You know? And so the other teacher saw that I was using it and they said, will you go with us to the superintendent? Cause we want to do a proposal for ESGI. I'm like, absolutely. Yeah. So we went and we've used it ever since as a district. So it's great.
Yeah, I think that's probably the most powerful way to get your district to be on board with it is, you know, the summertime is always when they have these really great free trial options. Yep. But just to use it for the first 6 weeks of school, you know, you've got 2 months for free. I love that they don't require a credit card. Because how many free trials have you signed up with and then you find out
you forget about them. You're like, what is this crazy charge on my credit card?
Yeah. There goes, you know, $200. I usually don't discover till like a year later. My husband Mark's like, what's going on? But you know, you can get that data and then take it to the powers that be and say, look at, not only is this helping me, but you as an administrator can log on and see the entire grade level. You know, where people are, where students stand. If you get a phone call from a parent, you can get that data. So it is a powerful, powerful tool.
Yeah.
But that's not what we're talking about, fine motor. So I'm wondering, I mean, you've been doing fine motor work for what has it been most of your kindergarten career? Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. And do you have that experience with other people on your team? Are they all also doing that? I mean, sometimes I would notice things that I would implement in my classroom and then I would see the results as compared to maybe a classroom who isn't doing it. I know you guys are, your team is pretty tight.
My team at my school is very tight, but we, you know, even if you have a really tight team, you're going to do things differently. So I know that one of my co-teachers, Andrea, she takes a lot of the morning workstations and she actually uses them at the end of the day before dismissal because she likes to have that time. They're still getting the same activity. It's just not at the beginning of the day, but that also has to do with scheduling too. So, you know, if you have a special or if you have something that you have to start right away, you can't do it. So, you know, you have to work with what you have. So, but I always make it really clear to the teachers in my district and also the teachers at my school, especially, you know, if there's something I have that you can use, go ahead and let me know. We can use it. So we all kind of teach the same way, but we do it in our own way. I think that's typical of any probably team of kindergarten students or teachers.
So if somebody's listening right now and they're like, well, I don't really have a fine motor station, but I'd like to try to implement that for next year. What would be like three things that you think everyone should implement? Like what, or maybe it's tools, maybe it's activities. What would be your three big suggestions? Or maybe you have more, but what would be your big suggestions?
Well, and I just wrote a blog post about this, you know, help for handwriting, because I'm like, I feel like, is it just me or is it handwriting? Like something's, a lot of people are like, yeah, I have to do handwriting, but we don't really have a plan, or you teach it really briefly and then you have to go on. Right. We don't have time. We got to go on. And I think you need to have a plan for how you're going to teach handwriting. And in that plan, you also have to include, what am I going to do to strengthen fine motor? You know, have a plan. Don't just go into the year and say, yeah, we're going to include fine motor this year. Know how you're going to do it, but start out small. I mean, I wouldn't tell anybody, you know, you have to include it in everything that you're doing. I would say find one or two activities to start out in the beginning. If you're not going to do morning workstations, because I love morning workstations, that's how I would start. But if you can't do that, find one or two activities that you are really feel strongly about, or that you already have the materials for, maybe using tongs or Play-Doh or Legos. Kind of inventory what you already have, and then find activities that you can use for that. Like, I have an obscene amount of tongs. Obscene. But other people
might like, we have all these. Yeah.
I buy them everywhere. Walmart, you know, Oriental Training, wherever you can find Walmart or Amazon. But you know,
and there's lots of different kinds of tongs. There's like the science ones that are kind of or you have the ones that are like you would see at the kitchen department store, which are really different because they have to use their muscles to open and shut them versus the other ones just a shutting motion.
That would be a great place to go because they have chip clips and stuff like that as well. And the other thing I would do is I would educate your parents. Parents want to help their students. They want them to do well, but sometimes they just don't know. So I have a free pamphlet. I have two free things on my blog you can get.
Okay.
A free pamphlet that I give to parents, right?
Right.
And in that, it just explains to them why fine motor is important. Hey, you know what? While you're making dinner, give your child this or hand them this or have them rip paper or have them, you know, these are some activities you can do at home that will help your child strengthen their hand muscles, will make writing easier for them. So nice. I have that and I send that home every year so that parents know it's not just a thing. It really is important. And the other thing I have that you can get free from my blog that is super valuable, I think, is that you're always going to have those kids that struggle more than others.
Yes.
They would benefit from 10 minutes of practice at home. So I make fine motor take-home kits. I only have 4 or 5 that I have.
Okay.
But I have them so that when I see those students that like maybe need a little extra help, I can take home this. They all want to do it. But I especially give it to those kids first. And I explain to the parents, you know, this, you only need 5-10 minutes a night. Only take one activity and just practice with these fine motor take-home kits. The activity's in there. Put it away. Bring it back to me in 2 weeks and I'll switch activities out. Or maybe your child doesn't need it anymore. So I have all the printables and how to put those together on my blog, and it's free. So that's the other thing I would do.
I'll make sure I include links so people can find that in the show notes so that they can find that. Cause that would be, I mean, those are the types of things that we need, like simple things that we can send home. And a way to, you know, there's so many different things that we have to say to parents. This is important. This is important. This is important. And so to have something that is, available, that's written, you know, by a kindergarten teacher for kindergarten students, I imagine first grade as well would totally benefit for some of this. And if you're pre-K, TK, you know, also, so yeah, I'll go ahead and, we'll talk after this is over and I'll get the locations of those. Cause that would be fantastic.
Yeah, we can do that. So that's suggestions, and have fun. Whatever the kids like to do, do more of that.
Do more of that. Mm-hmm. I imagine, like, I think I've seen you had sticker things that you do also. Oh,
stickers they love. And that's that's a good thing because it's an easy thing that parents can donate. You know, parents are always asking, you know, even if you're in a very struggling community, like we have kids that are really struggling, you know, homeless kids, whatever, but parents still want to feel like they're contributing if they can. Yes. So if you can contribute, I always am looking for stickers. So, you know, small stickers. And I'll get stickers all year long. But I use stickers every day in my classroom. So stickers are a great little fine motor tool, kind of peeling it off.
I'm going to peel them off. Yes. Mm-hmm. And I also know, you know, you can get so many at the dollar store as well. That's a great place to find them. And, you know, if they're just going to peel them, it's not like you're looking for the highest quality stickers anyhow, right? You just need something, right? Yep.
Yeah, so that's perfect. So I always try to find those items. Like, I always suggest that to teachers, you know, find something inexpensive that you can ask parents to provide because they want to contribute to your class and they want to feel like they're helping.
Yes.
And not all of them can do, you know, the big items.
Or yes.
If you have an Amazon list. I don't have one of those, but I know some teachers have Amazon lists and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But stickers are a buck. And like sometimes you can get them on sale even for less than that.
Right.
That's something
I love that. Well, Marcia, you know, I love your ideas. You know, I love you. You and I have been friends from the beginning, and I'm honored to have you in my life and on this podcast. So thank you so much for joining me. And I know Adam, because he'll be listening to this.
Puppy's better.
I know. Puppy problems. You know what that's like. But anyhow, thank you so much. Loved it. And everybody else, have a great day.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye. Hey, thanks for listening to the Classroom Collaborative Podcast.
If you are enjoying these episodes, please make sure that you subscribe wherever you are finding them.
And share and rate it so others can find it as well.
We'll see you guys on the next episode. Thanks for listening.
Bye.